Thank you to everyone who has taken part so far this evening. Thank you to everyone who's read so well, and also the musicians who have been working extra hard tonight, taking us through those carols. We're now going to have our next reading, and I'm going to read this one. I think I have drawn the short straw, and this reading is the odd one out. All the others were prophecies right through the Old Testament. And here we come to Matthew, the first one in the New Testament. This is Matthew chapter 1, beginning to read at verse 1, and we'll read right through to verse 17. And by the way, if I pronounce one's name wrong and you can get them to come and tell me it's wrong, then I'll be happy to listen. If not, well, tough. So here we go. A record of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac, the father of Jacob. Jacob, the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah, the father of Perez and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar. Perez, the father of Hezron. Hezron, the father of Ram. Ram, the father of Amminadab. Amminadab, the father of Nahshon. Nahshon, the father of Solomon. Solomon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Obed, the father of Jesse. And Jesse, the father of King David. David was the father of Solomon, whose mother had been Uriah's wife. Solomon, the father of Rehoboam. Rehoboam, the father of Abijah. Abijah, the father of Asa. Asa, the father of Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat, the father of Jehoram. Jehoram, the father of Uzziah. Uzziah, the father of Jotham. Jotham, the father of Ahaz. Ahaz, the father of Hezekiah. Hezekiah, the father of Manasseh. Manasseh, the father of Amon. Amon, the father of Josiah. And Josiah, the father of Jeconiah and his brothers at the time of the exile to Babylon. After the exile to Babylon, Jeconiah was the father of Shealtiel. Shealtiel, the father of Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel, the father of Abiud. Abiud, the father of Eliakim. Eliakim, the father of Azor. Azor, the father of Zadok. Zadok, the father of Akim. Akim, the father of Eliud. Eliud, the father of Eleazar. Eleazar, the father of Mathan. Mathan, the father of Jacob. And Jacob, the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who is called Christ. Thus, there were 14 generations in all from Abraham to David, 14 from David to the exile to Babylon, and 14 from the exile to the Christ. And I think after that, I'm going to have a drink. We just couldn't wait. It was a day that Holly and I had been looking forward to for quite a few weeks. This was happening about 2 weeks ago. And then finally, the day arrived. It was the 1st of December, and it was time to finally light the infamous Advent candle. Now, neither Holly or I know, a bit deprived, have ever had an Advent candle, so we were really, really excited. So Holly grabbed the matches, and we set the candle up in the middle of the breakfast table, and we lit it. And I'm even going to do a reconstruction. The fire extinguishers are just behind there, if required. And we lit it. And we were mesmerized watching this candle. <coughs> 30 seconds passed. And then a minute. And then we thought, what are we supposed to do now? The distance between the number one and the top of the candle just wasn't getting any smaller. So we thought, well, I suppose we probably better start eating our breakfast. And all that excitement just vanished in a second. It was all gone. It was just like a vapor, all that excitement. What are we supposed to do now when we wait as the candle burns on? I'm not good at waiting. Are you? Are you good at waiting? I remember when I used to work in Lancaster and I used to go to night school in a college two nights a week, and the college was about 3 miles away. I could either opt for the short route through all the traffic that took about 45 minutes, or could go on a huge detour, about an 8 mile detour, and get there in about 30 minutes, covering about 8 miles. And I always went the long way round because I felt like I was making progress and I didn't like waiting. Or how about those dreadful words when you're on the telephone? Please hold. Or how about you drive into a car park and someone's trying to park their car, doing a 17-point manoeuvre, trying to get into that gap, and you're just sat there waiting. Or how about this one? You're at the checkout. You've been stood there what feels like perhaps 5 minutes, feels like maybe even longer, maybe 5 hours. They open a new checkout. You're right at the back. There's a queue behind you, and they all rush in front of you. And again, you've got to go and wait all the longer. Your wait continues. What about waiting till Christmas? What is it, 11 more sleeps or something? Is it 11, 12, 9, I don't know, 10, somewhere around there? How can you cope with that? Will it ever arrive? Now, none of those things have a patch on the wait that was finally over in our passage that I read this evening. This wait had been going on over 2,000 years. God had made some promises to a man who, when this passage was written, had been dead and buried about 2,000 years. And the promises up until this point hadn't yet been kept. But now, the wait was over. Now, I don't know how much you know about the Bible, and I don't know what you thought about all those names I read out in the reading I have just done. You probably thought that was just a long list of boring names. Why do we have to read all that? What is the point? What we've got to realise when reading the Bible is the book of Matthew and all the books in the Bible are not just thrown together without reason. Matthew didn't just put random things down. He wrote things for a reason. He wrote things for a reason. So we must ask the question, why did Matthew start his gospel with all these names? Why was that his purpose? Why did he think, I'm going to start with a load of names right at the beginning of my book? That's what we're going to think about this evening. And I want to suggest three reasons. I keep nervously glancing to check we don't go past the day. The first reason Matthew writes these lists, well, the first one I'm going to give you, is he wants to tell us who this book is all about. That's one of the first reasons, well, the first reason I'm giving, why Matthew writes all these names. Recently, I've been reading some books by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Sherlock Holmes books. I've read The Sign of Four and The Valley of Fear, and they're books that are very difficult to put down. And it's very interesting reading his book, seeing how he starts the chapter, seeing how he begins his book, and how he's trying to build up a picture in your mind of what's happening. Matthew is doing exactly the same thing. Now, for us, it loses the impact because we're not Jewish. But when the Jews read these words, these names, they would have been totally gripped by these opening verses. Why do I say that? Well, this is a whole list of names of quite famous people. And they're all pointing to someone. Did you see who they were all pointing to? All these verses are pointing to, they're all about Jesus. So notice in verse 1, a record of the genealogy of Jesus Christ. What about verse 16? And Jacob, the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who is the Christ. Verse 17, thus there were 14 generations in all from Abraham to David, 14 from David to the exile to Babylon, and 14 from the exile to Christ. See, these verses are a family line, a family tree of Jesus. That's who they are all about. And Matthew, at the very opening of his book, is wanting to tell us who his main character is. His main character and what his book is all about is this man called Jesus. And that is a key point for us to remember and to have in our minds. But Matthew is doing more than that. Because if you spend the time, and it will be profitable time, if you spend the time reading right through the book of Matthew, which is a historical document recording the life of Jesus, you would realize, before you get to the very end of the book, that his book is not just about Jesus. He wants us to realize that all of life is about Jesus. He wants us to know that this world is all about Jesus. And until we make sense of Jesus, we won't be able to make any sense of our own lives. That's what Matthew's doing. Until you make sense of Jesus and how you relate to him, your life will not make sense. See, he's not simply just a historical figure that you can shelve and put to one side. You can't just forget about Jesus. He's a person you must investigate. He's someone you must look at the facts about. You must use your reason and your intellect and come to logical conclusions about who this Jesus is. And Matthew gives us the words, actions, life, and death of Jesus, which demands our investigation. So that's one reason why Matthew starts his book with all these names. He's telling us it's all about Jesus. Second reason. The second reason why Matthew starts his book in this way is to show us that God keeps his promises. God keeps his promises. When we read this chapter, there are lots of quite big names in Jewish history. There are some celebrities, if you like, of the Jewish nation. Jesus comes from the line of Abraham. Now, that name might not mean much to you, but 2,000 years before Matthew was writing, in our second reading tonight, we saw some promises that God made to Abraham. And the promise of God to Abraham was that one of his descendants would be a person that God would use to bless the entire world. Now, not too much longer after that, God made some more promises to one of Abraham's descendants, David. And the promise, again, it was another one of our readings, the promise to David was that one of his descendants would sit on the throne and rule forever. So when Jewish readers read these names, this chapter, they would be thinking, not just Jesus had impressive connections, that isn't Matthew's main point. They would be thinking, the promises are on track. This is about fulfillment. This is about God keeping his promises. No wonder the first readers were gripped. Promises that were made to them and their nation were going to be fulfilled. In other words, the wait is over. We've arrived. We're here. The promises. See, Jesus is the one that makes all the promises of the Old Testament real. He's the reality of them all. He fulfills them all. Because Jesus is the Christ. Now, Christ isn't simply Jesus' surname. It's not his surname. It means something like God's promised King, or Messiah, or Saviour. And that shouldn't just excite the first readers. It should also excite you, and it should excite me. Because Matthew is telling us that a Saviour has arrived. Someone who will mean blessing for the whole world. Someone that will mean rescue for people who are lost in darkness. One that will secure a kingdom that will last eternally. This isn't pie in the sky. This isn't like the tooth fairy. This isn't Peter Pan. This is actual, a real way to avoid and not have to fear eternal death. But actually to be able to receive something which lasts forever. And it's through this person that is fulfilled. That is a big claim. And that is something that demands our investigation simply just because of the size of it. So that's our second reason, to show that God keeps his promises. So we've seen already that Matthew used all these names to tell us it was all about Jesus. We've also seen, secondly, that Matthew has given us all these names to show us that God is keeping his promises. All those promises of the Old Testament are being fulfilled in Jesus. But finally, Matthew records all these names to tell us that this is good news for all people. This is good news for all people. Jesus has made a huge historical impact through his teaching and through his life. It's incredible that one person could impact the world so greatly. if you think even in Ashton in Makefield 2,000 years ago, we're still talking about this man, Jesus. All across the world, people are speaking about Jesus. And no matter how much or how little you know about him, you will know about him. You know, even if you only know small about him, you've heard about him, you know he was a person, a religious figure. But this is something often people get wrong. They think Jesus is perhaps just for religious people or just for good people. And you might think, I'm not religious, therefore Jesus isn't for me. Or you might think, I'm not good, so therefore Jesus isn't for me. But Matthew starts his book in this way because he wants us to know that Jesus is for all people. He's not just for good people. He's not just for religious people. He's for all people. Now, how can we say that? How do we know that from those names? There is a saying in the English language that is a huge contradiction. Well, there are many sayings that are huge contradictions, but what I'm thinking of is this. I'll give you my unbiased opinion. Have you heard that one before? Someone say to you, I'll give you my unbiased opinion. That's an obvious contradiction because if it's my opinion, it is obviously biased. And I don't know what you're like when you tell stories that you're in. Do you always come out looking like the good guy? Or maybe one that caught the biggest fish? Or the person who's never to blame? I mean, have you ever tripped over something and blamed the person who put it there rather than the fact that you weren't watching where you were going? You know, you blame the person for not tidying up rather than the fact that you had your eyes closed or you were distracted. See, we're always biased. We put a nice gloss on things. We're always the good guy, never the bad guy. We're the ones who got it right. Everyone else is the one that got it wrong. When Jews wrote their family trees and their lines of families, they always traced the males. Now notice, when Matthew records the family line of Jesus, he doesn't just trace all the males, he includes a few females in it as well. He didn't need to do that. He chose to. But notice, if you've got a Bible with you, Matthew doesn't record all the ladies, all the mothers. He only records certain ones. And it's interesting because Matthew, all the ones he mentions, reveal to us some scandal or something that's just a bit suspicious. All the women, so one of them was a prostitute, one was a foreigner, one was one that a king had stolen and had the husband killed, and we could go on. There is always scandal surrounding them. So why does Matthew go out of his way to show all these people in Jesus' family line? I mean, Matthew could have an unbiased opinion and just gloss over them. Just list all the males or just include some of the good females. Why does he mention all of them? Why does he purposefully draw our attention to the scandals? Why not cover them up? Well, it's because Jesus, the Messiah, is the Messiah for people like that. He came to save his people from their sins. And if any family needed saving, it was this one. And if anybody needs saving, it's people like you and me. People, ordinary people who have made mistakes, who have done things that God does not condone. And the fact that Matthew lists all these people in Jesus' family line is reminding us that God is doing something amazing. God is bringing rescue to the world through Jesus, meaning people like all these people listed can be part of the blessing. They are some of the reasons why Matthew starts his gospel like that, and that tells us it is a gospel. It is good news. It's all about Jesus, which is good news. It's to show us that God keeps his promises, which is good news. And it's to show that this good news is for people like you and me, regular, ordinary folk, people who have maybe messed up in the past, who have messed up in the past. The wait is over. The Messiah is here. In some senses, life is simply the waiting room for eternity. You know what it's like, don't you? You're going to the dentist or you're going to the doctors and you sat there And it's a bit awkward because the doctor's going to be 10 minutes late and you're looking around and you don't know what to do. Then you spot a lifestyle magazine in the middle of the room, don't you? And you pick it up, you start reading an article about sewing, and you don't even sew, but there's nothing else to do. So you're just reading this lifestyle magazine that's pretty boring. And finally, you get called and you go through. I think our lives can sometimes be a bit like that. We fill our time with all sorts of things, trivial things, pointless things, things that just pass the time. But we don't stop and think. We don't stop to think about what's to come. We don't stop and think about the big questions. What is this life all about? What happens after I die? Is there a God? Is there a way to know him? Is there a way to be connected to him? And tonight I want to challenge you to think about the one that Matthew says life is all about. The one who will keep his promises. The one who guarantees that no harm will come to you eternally if you trust in him. It's only Jesus that makes sense out of life. Find out about him. It will be time well spent. If you want to do that or you've got any questions, please speak to me. We are planning on running a Christianity Explored course in the new year on a Tuesday morning. If that's something you would like to know more about, please have a word with myself or Marlene and we'll be glad to give you more details. But thank you so much for being here tonight. We're going to continue as we sing our final carol and then I will close in prayer and you're all welcome to join us for refreshments downstairs straight after this service. Let's stand to sing.